Welcome to Entrepreneurial Insights, a podcast brought to you by the Society of Entrepreneurs and hosted by Pearson Crutcher and Jay Healy. The Society of Entrepreneurs is a membership organization founded to promote entrepreneurship and provide education and resources to Memphis business owners.
In this podcast, we'll have a series of interviews with accomplished business owners and entrepreneurs in Memphis, Tennessee. There are so many great entrepreneurs in Memphis, and their stories need to be told.
Welcome to Entrepreneurial Insights. Welcome to Entrepreneurial Insights. Today's interview is with Andy Tyser and Michael Hudman of Enjoy AM Restaurant Group. They own and are the chefs at some of Memphis's best restaurants and certainly my favorites, including Andrew Michael, Hog and Hominy, Bishop, Catherine and Mary, and the list goes on. This is a great interview, and I know that you'll enjoy hearing about Andy and Michael's friendship and how it turned into a series of very, very great restaurants. Enjoy the show. I am so excited today to have Michael Hudman and Andy Tyser today with us from Enjoy AM, probably better known as Hog and Hominy, Andrew Michael, Bishop, Great Canary, Catherine and Mary. Did I leave any of them out?
Nope, I think that's it.
No, I've covered the Memphis ones anyway. Yeah. That's right. Then the one in New Orleans. Guys, thank you so much for being here. This
thank
is so exciting.
Yeah,
so,
we're happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
We always like to start out with just kind of your basic background. Where did you, both grew up here. Mm-hmm. So why don't you tell us about that?
Born and raised in Memphis. Andy and I met, I guess it was like sixth grade basketball court. That's where we really met, was playing basketball. Back then, it's funny because with us having young kids now, you see this, the relationship of the kids growing up is so different. Like, I dropped my son off at school and the older kids are always so nice. And, you know, it was funny when we first met, you know, you never hung out with the St. Louis. I went to St. Louis, so you never hung out with the St. Anne or Holy Rosary. And now you have this really cool intermingling. But Andy and I did that. We started playing sports against each other and just became immediate best friends.
And I think, you know, we both grew up with the same background, I guess, with our family. Our grandparents were from Italy, so our family life was surrounded by Sunday lunches that turned into dinners with aunts and uncles and cousins. And so, like, when we met each other and got to see that side, it's like we both thought our family was the only ones that did that. And then to see that correlation was kind of the foundation of our friendship, I guess. And then from there, it was like we went, you know, we both went to Christian Brothers, and we actually started talking about those family Sunday gatherings were always about food. And we both shared a passion for that, obviously. But that kind of started the conversation. And we were talking about doing this in like eighth and ninth grade.
Well, that is so cool. So you knew what you wanted to do from a very young age.
Mm-hmm. We had a good idea, we thought. We kind of felt like, to Andy's point, we were just saying, if we could like copy this Sunday feeling in a restaurant setting, you know, it's such an amazing, hospitable vibe. And, you know, it was funny, like Andy, it's so funny because we'd have lunch, we'd go to church and then have lunch. And then while we're eating lunch, we'd be at the table talking about what we're having for dinner. Yeah. So it's like, it just never stopped, but it was awesome. We think back to that a lot, and it's kind of what's, I think, molded us for our vision of hospitality and cooking.
So did you guys go to college together or?
Yeah. So we always kind of lay out a list of goals. We work in like a series of five goals at a time kind of situation. So it was like, you know, we wanted to go to college. We wanted to go to culinary school. We wanted to go to Europe and go to school over there and work at European kitchens. Ultimately, we always wanted to come back to Memphis and do it where we were born and raised.
So we had a little brief split. I went to Auburn, Andy went to Ole Miss, and then we came back. Andy was going to a culinary school here in Memphis with, what's the name? Chef.
Joseph Carey.
Yeah. And so it was funny. Andy would send me recipes. I was playing lacrosse at Auburn, and so we'd always have big dinners before the game. So he'd be sending me like what they're doing, and we'd be cooking up there. I'd be cooking for the team. And so we did that. Once we got done, we met back up. We went to Johnson & Wales in Charleston, South Carolina. We were there for 2.5 years.
Then we went to the Italian Culinary Institute in Calabria, Italy. We're there for a half a year or so. Spent some time in Lyon, France, and just kind of traveled all of Italy. Spent some time in Geneva, and then came back. And, you know, we worked for Jose Gutierrez at Chez Philippe, but we worked under Jose for about almost 5 years.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
And that was down at Chez Philippe?
Mm-hmm. Chez Philippe and Encore.
And Encore. Okay. And we started.
That's right.
Our first cooking job, every job we've had cooking has been together. Our first one was Frank Grisani's at Overall Ridgeway at Embassy Suites, and it was awesome. I mean, I learned so many different things from that experience, from Chef Jose's experience as well.
Were you always planning to open your own restaurant?
Yeah, that was the main goal. And originally it was just Andrew Michael. And then once we got into Andrew Michael, I think it was about the first year, we started thinking maybe we should do a second.
What year was it that you started Andrew Michael?
2008.
Okay, I couldn't remember it.
Andy will let you forget.
Fantastic year to open a restaurant.
Oh, yeah, it really was, wasn't it?
So. How old were you all when you did that?
You were 28.
28.
I was just turned 30, I think.
Was there ever a point in this very long journey together where you were going in different directions, or were you always committed to this?
No, it was every decision we made, even the time we were separated for those 3-4 years, I mean, we were still, like, I was going to Auburn, he was going to Ole Miss. Yeah. Like, we were still hanging out all the time, but it was always, you know, same goal oriented, I guess.
And Andy just touched on it, but every decision we've ever made has been talked about, discussed, and just... it has to make sense for both of us. I mean, we obviously give and take on if he's more passionate about something or if I'm more passionate about something, but it's always because for us, I think the first year with learning to open a business and learning to manage people and 2008 just being that beautiful year that it was, we had a lot of tough moments. And we had one moment and we were sitting outside and, you know, everybody told us, don't go into business with your best friend. It's worse. The only thing worse than that is going into business with your family. And so, which we did both of. And we had one moment, and it was that one moment, and we both looked at each other and said, it's not worth our friendship. And it was pretty bleak at the beginning. It was pretty tough. We weren't ready for really any of it, especially the managing decisions of having, I think at that time we had 8 people work for us, and yeah, all 8 people looking at you make a decision. And we grew up really quick, still make a lot of bad decisions, but we stand behind all of them as much as we can.
I think the whole entire city of Memphis thanks you for persevering. All of our favorite restaurants. So how do you split your duties as a partnership? Is one of you back of house, one of you front of house, or you just both do all of it?
So we're both back of the house, but you know, over the years, we have a really strong core team with Nick and Ryan. And Ryan, I mean, they've been with us pretty much since the beginning, and we've all kind of learned on the fly together. So it's very much a collaboration as far as like all the decisions of the day-to-day operations go.
Yeah, it's definitely a family feel, and that was a big one too. I think, you know, back to that Sunday, our whole vision was like, let's treat this business like it's family, you know, and that gives you a lot of leeway, gives you a lot of room to fight with each other. And then you have to make up because you're family. At least that's what we keep telling each other.
Well, and I know that in the beginning, the making of the ravioli was truly a family affair, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
First year, our parents were so instrumental in everything, all of our success and who we were. I mean, from growing up to fully having their hands in the restaurant as well. To the point of the raviolis, every Sunday was ravioli day. And it's funny because it's always been a thing. We make raviolis and cappelletti's for our families for Thanksgiving, Easter, and Christmas. And we always did it a certain way. You know, you sit at the table and you make the little balls, and then you do the, you know, you roll the dough out, put it on the press, and we're sitting, and it takes forever. But at home, it's great. You know,
you're drinking wine, you're listening to music, yeah, and you're with your relatives. Like, it's an all-day affair.
I'll never forget, we're sitting at the bar at Andrew Michael, and Andy, we're sitting at the high-top tables, the old bar. And Andy looks by and he goes, what are we doing? Like, why are we, let's just get a bowl of filling and then just stick it into the molds. And we look back and it's shaved off like 3 hours. We're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's good to progress, oh, right? Yeah.
So you talked about that it was tough at first getting things up and running, that you were a team of 8 and that you had to grow up fast. What were the most important lessons you learned right then and there?
Humility was a big one. I think we grew up in a system of cooking where it was, you know, you do whatever the chef says. There is no second guessing. There is no, it's just yes, chef, no chef, and you move on.
But then also just, I think, being grateful and thankful that we even had the opportunity to work together and appreciate the fact that you get to go to work with your best friend and do the craft or the thing that you love to do, kept all of that kind of stuff in perspective and like helped us compartmentalize the moments, I guess, a little bit, and not be like, very easily you could have become overwhelmed in certain situations, but like just to kind of like take a step back and like have the reassurance of, I know he's got my back, he knows I got his back, and that no matter what way we get to where we're going, it's the same. We want the same goal, you know? So it was like always having that kind of backup to get to the proper decision, I guess, in the moment.
Yeah, I think the appreciation too, that's a great point. Just like the everyday business, just learning what it means to have food costs and what it means to juggle expenses. And we were fortunate enough to work for Chef Jose, who we don't throw anything away. And, you know, that lesson gets really like ingrained into your everything. And the style of cooking we do comes from a very like peasant form, which is really comforting. I think when we were living in Italy, we really saw that even further. And it just like, that was a big one. And learning how to manage people, which we're still learning. That's every
never,
single
we'll,
day.
We'll never like conquer that.
Most difficult.
So my, having heard some of these stories before, at some point, were you kind of ready to shut the restaurant down before it got successful?
We had a moment at the very beginning where we didn't have a walk-in refrigerator in the first restaurant. So like we had to go to the market every day, get everything, prep everything every single day. And like, it was very difficult to keep that up at that pace we were at. That first Christmas present was a walk-in refrigeration unit for the restaurant. And that was like a big moment for us that helped us breathe a little bit. And as stupid as that sounds, like it was a big moment.
Huge.
For us. Was there also a review that sort of ramped things up?
Yeah, I think the first commercial appeal review that came out, I mean, it was right after there. I mean, what's so difficult, I think too, what was so frustrating is and anyone who has a restaurant or their own business or everybody, there's so much passion that goes into it. Mm-hmm. And granted, we understand that not everybody's going to like everything we do. And, you know, that just becomes a matter of opinion. And that's quite all right. And that's great. And we love the idea of like immediate gratification or immediate failure. And I think he and I thrive off that. And we push ourselves with it. I think what was really difficult for us to swallow at such a young age was, you know, that's a hard lesson to understand and really comprehend, is people aren't really digging what you're doing and it's really difficult. And then you start to look at people, you know, our parents helped us out and they gave us money to open. And, you know, at that time that was their life savings. And we're like, we got to figure this out. Like we can't, there's no way we can sleep with that. You know, we can go find another job, but we can't do that. And, you know, we just kept our head down and believed in each other and believed in what we were doing. And, you know, we got pretty lucky, I think. And
seems to be working.
Seems to be working. And how gratifying to have such great support from your parents, that they obviously believed wholeheartedly in the two of you. So it worked out for them.
They didn't understand what we were cooking at first, but they definitely always stick behind us.
Okay. So you had Andrew Michael. And then when did you, and was Hog and Hominy next?
Yeah, we did Hog and Hominy next, and that was kind of like, you know, we had started to do some traveling about the third year of Andrew Michael's. Like, we didn't leave that place for the first 2 years. And then, like, in year three, we started doing some traveling and going out west and going up north and just kind of trying to do research and get motivated and inspired. And that came about was just, like, we wanted a neighborhood wood-burning pizza joint that honestly was stuff we wanted to eat when we were off work at night, you know, like I'm just kind of like, it didn't really have a theme.
Just so you know, that's what we all want to eat when we're off work.
Exactly. The John T. Burger speaks to me.
So yeah, that was kind of the original idea behind that. It was just kind of like a playground for us as far as cooking wise. We didn't have to be, you know, and Andrew Michael's a certain thing. We wanted to kind of cook outside that box, I guess.
So from there, then Hog and Hominy, then?
Then it was like we were on track to do, we wanted that downtown pasta restaurant, you know, like go to the Orpheum show and like do the thing. And we were planning and moving towards that opening. And then the New Orleans thing kind of fell in our lap in a way. So that was a tough year because New Orleans actually ended up opening before Catherine and Mary's. New Orleans opened in March, and then Catherine Mary's opened in like October of the same year. And we usually don't do that. Usually it was like, hey, when we develop this strategy, let's work on a concept, open it, and then run it for a year before we do the next thing. So we kind of like were on a 2-year rotation, was our game plan for things. And then that kind of was a curveball. But
Andy's really good with the timeline. I forget everything.
And then, of course, then we did Porcellinos. That special, special place.
She gone.
Porcellinos was awesome. That was one of my favorites. I think it was a very romantic version of this, where we could retire and cut meat and
do this charcuterie and the sausages and all this. And
it was a cool place.
Thanks. Yeah, it was great. It was probably just a little bit ahead. I think the location wasn't the right spot.
Yeah, we were sandwiched right between Whole Foods and Fresh Market. And we're like,
two Krogers.
Two Krogers. Go buy all your groceries, but don't buy your meat. Yeah. Come to Porcellinos. Yeah. Try to turn off and on to Brookhaven and rush hour traffic.
Yeah. I mean, I think we could have. And then we just fell in love with the nostalgia of what that place was. So we, you know, we just kept trying to keep it going. And then at the end of the day, it was like we just had to realize that, you know, we missed on one, you know.
It's all right. Your track record's pretty good. You're okay with that one.
Batting average of 800.
Yeah. Okay. We may miss on another or two. Who knows?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so. So then you did, was it Great Canary? And then, yeah, because Bishop's the newest, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the Great Canary and then Bishop. Yeah, that's right.
And so I'm going to talk kind of about the elephant in the room, because you have restaurants and we all know that the pandemic has done nothing for the ability to be able to hire good employees, or any employees, basically. How have you guys done with that?
When the pandemic started, we had conversations and we're like, dude, if we have two restaurants open at the end of this thing, it'll be a miracle. Like, but also, you know, we try to twist it into a positive. Like, when are we ever going to have the opportunity to just shut it down? Like, we created this machine and it's been cranking for a decade or whatever. And it's like, to be able to just turn everything off and just like meet with our teams. And like, we did some real soul searching in those moments. And we got with our core guys of Enjoy AM, you know, the management restaurant group. And then like, we were like, well, what's our goals here? What are we trying to achieve? What systems and procedures do we need to like just refresh and like look at it from just a clean slate, right? And then we started talking, and like, I think throughout that process, we learned to listen. Like, we created these like questionnaires or like whatever, like we really like started talking to our team members and like getting feedback from them, like what areas we miss on, what things we can improve on, try to find a work-life balance, try to find all these things that to make our company better, to be a part of, benefits, whatever it was. So like in that moment, we kind of reconstructed the way we do things and for the betterment, I feel.
Yeah, we definitely did. I mean, I think Tanny's point, it was a pause, pivot, take what's working and let's see what isn't. And like, let's really magnify that, blow it up and try to fix it and try to change it. And I mean, Andy was definitely the ringleader of the work-life balance. It was a big one, you know, offering benefits to full-time employees. I mean, that was, Andy was talking about that for the company, doing it way before it was even a thing. And it feels good. Like, I mean, we always talk about, in our business, we want people to feel like they can raise a family. Like, you know, we want you to be able to be invested in what you believe in and start a family and provide for that family through what we're doing. That, to us, is the biggest compliment, biggest achievement, if we can have that happen.
Yeah. Well, and I know you also are pretty well known for bringing people up within your organization. So I think, and you've mentioned one of your employees that's been with you from day one, really, hasn't he?
Yeah. Nick Tarico, yeah.
It's the first person we hired.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did that. We really screwed that up, too.
We had this, like, this whole system, like, you know, it doesn't matter how good they are, how well they interview. When they come in here, like, we're stone-faced, and they're walking out of here, and we'll get back to them. You know, that kind of whole vibe.
Yeah.
And we had, you know, we were trying to have signals and whatever during those interviews. And then, like, you know, he came in, and like, we're like, yeah, well, you know, we'll maybe give you a call next week. And like, when he left and started walking out the stairs, we're like, what are we doing? We're like, we need to hire that guy. Yeah. So like, we ran out in the parking lot and chased him down as he was leaving. We're like, wait, come back. You want to start tomorrow? So,
yeah.
It was silly. But like, to see his growth and like every decision we've made, I mean, Nick has been just as instrumental and as loud of voices.
What does Nick do now?
I mean, he's the director of operations, honestly. He's...
What doesn't he do?
He does everything.
I mean, he expedited last night in the kitchen so I could go watch my daughter's basketball game. I mean, it's like... And Ryan Radish, too. I mean, they all just... This year, the last couple of years, you've really seen these guys step up. I mean, really the whole team. I mean, because nobody wants to be at... No one knew what COVID was, and nobody knew how to navigate through it, and everybody's still like, you know, it's just an unknown. Yeah. And the teams, all of our teams, everybody that came out on the back end of it has come out significantly stronger. And it's just really neat to see.
Yeah, I mean, and like Nick and Ryan Radish and Ryan Jennings, like from a service and hospitality standpoint, the craft cocktails, the wine program, like they've really helped hone in each little department inside the restaurant to be like the perfect example of each little thing as a whole. And like we couldn't have achieved all those things without those guys at all.
What qualities are you looking for new hires?
We just want good energy, you know? We don't care what the skill set is. If it's your cooking, we don't care what your palate is. Like, those are things we'll learn together. But it's just like, come in with a good attitude and a good work ethic. Yeah, like, and we'll give you everything we have.
Everything.
You know, like, that we can. That's all we're looking for right now. Like, it doesn't...
Just positivity.
Yeah.
Happy to come into work. Happy to be a part of something.
Because it is a struggle. Like, you know, just in covering... The hours and extra time you have to cover for each other makes it so much more difficult too. Like, you know, cause like once COVID gets in a business, whatever business, it doesn't matter if it's a building, a restaurant or whatever, it's going to get everywhere. And people are just going to start falling left and right. And it makes more work for every other team member. So they all have to step up. And it's like, and it lasts so long too. Like if you get a COVID case here and it's like, and then the next week, another person next week, and it's just like, it could be an 8-week situation where you're just constantly covering for each other. And it's just, it gets tiresome for people.
And it's easy for negativity to set in. It's easy for like the blame game to set in. And it's just, I don't know. We've always been taught that it's never about the blame. It's never about anything. It's just, how can we help each other? And I mean, the last 2 years have been, we've wore more hats, more different hats. I mean, Andy bartended at Hog and Hominy 2 months ago.
It's like every day you wake up in the mirror and you're like, you know, you just remind yourself like tough times don't last forever. Tough people do. You know, like,
if anybody's going out front during service, it's always Andy. They keep me always in the
back. Well, always are developing a new skill set.
That's right. So that's right.
Well, one of the, you know, I mean, you read about it everywhere that people cannot find employees. I mean, restaurants, anybody. But are you doing anything different to try to find those people now?
I mean, that's a big one. I think recruiting is big. We were talking about that a couple of days ago, just trying to find new avenues of recruitment, I think you see a lot of people, not necessarily bribing, but like offering these bonuses and offering all this stuff. I mean, we do that. Like we've always done that. If you bring somebody in, you know, we'll whatever. But like, there's no magic spot to go find people.
Well, yeah. And I think it's like, this industry is going to have a pretty long hangover from this thing, and people are going to be, you know, gun shy to get back into it because it showed how vulnerable it is, and it's going to take some time to build that trust back, I guess, or maybe that comfort to get back in. Because, like, look, in high school and college, if you need a job, restaurants are perfect stepping stones to.
You can learn so much.
You can learn so much.
Schedules are flexible.
Yeah, you can make nice money. You can get cultured, and then you can also learn how to work with people. I mean, it's just a good stepping stone to get, you know, or if you stay in that profession like forever, it's a good place to be, but like it could definitely give you skill sets for, you know, for future.
I think we lost the percentage that will never come back. I think
for sure
during the first 2 years of COVID, everybody had the ability to stay home. Restaurants were closed. So you had a lot of people who were maybe a semester or a couple hours away from doing what they started to do or finishing this class to be a welder or whatever it may or may not be. So they were afforded that opportunity to not have to work. And I don't think we'll get that group back, you know, and
probably some lifers that won't come back either. I mean, I think it was just all a lot of hands-on job-oriented professions work.
You had said earlier, like, when the COVID shutdown happened, it was a chance for you to press pause and sort of revisit your business models and how you were operating the restaurants. I think for every person, personal career, it was the same thing. Yeah. So a lot of people who were sort of stuck on the treadmill weren't sure if they needed or wanted to get off. Once the treadmill stopped, they had a chance to revisit.
Right. Yeah. They were almost forced to, you know.
Yeah.
It was either just do this and continue paused or maybe I'll go finish that up. And
right. So that's why, you know, I think the number is 3 million people have sort of left the workplace and never come back. Mm-hmm. So that's a big impact.
That's interesting. Well, you know, speaking about coming back, are you seeing diners coming back? I mean, it seems to me that when I'm at your restaurant, they're back.
Oh, yeah.
And they want the same amount of service that they had before with fewer people serving them.
It's funny, but like at the beginning, you know, there was definitely an understanding from everyone, from customer to team member, and in every profession, like, hey, like we're all just getting, trying to get back to normal. So there's like an understanding and like a, it's okay kind of vibe. And now it's definitely like, you can definitely feel the shift of like, it's cranking and blowing and going again.
But also too, we really never tried to hang our hat on that. You know, it's like we've always come from a place of if someone's coming to the restaurant, it's our job to, you know, be very grateful and gracious that they've chose us to spend their money with us. I mean, there's a ton of awesome restaurants in the city. So, you know, you see a lot of restaurants, a lot of our friends all around the country in Memphis saying, you know, hey, give us a break. We're open. But I don't know.
Yeah, we never wanted to take that stance.
We never wanted to. We just want to say, look, I mean, you know, we strive for perfection and we're always going to fall below it. But if we can hang out close to it, that's great. And we've kind of loosened up a couple of things. But I mean, the core values of being hospitable and being grateful and gracious. We had a really awesome compliment yesterday from a guy coming by the restaurant and didn't talk about the food, didn't talk about the drink, didn't talk about anything, not the decor. He really reiterated how hospitable we are. And that is like a huge one. I mean, you can have a terrible meal and feel like you were fully taken care of and people will come back. And it's that feeling of you're coming into the home and just, we want you to leave happy, forget about everything. You know, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on outside the world.
Yeah,
today.
It might not be your, we might not hit all, like obviously we're not perfect. We might miss on some points, but you're not going to see a lack of effort, you know,
right,
from everybody on the team to at least try to be.
Well, I know you said that you've talked to other people in the restaurant industry throughout all of this, but have you had any special mentors or advisors that helped you along the way?
I mean, a ton.
Yeah.
We call and cry to a lot of people. it's like a crying circle. I mean, people who have helped us from day one are, you know, Erling has always been there for us in Memphis. Mike Lotta, Donald Link, Jeff Michaud from some guys all over the country. I mean, I think, too, we're on a bunch of, like, different text threads in the city with different chefs and hearing and, you know, everybody's going through the same thing. There's always that sense of comfort, I guess, in that as well. And a good support group. So everybody here in the city,
That's one thing. Yeah. I mean, I will say that this whole has brought all of us closer, just the restaurateurs and a lot closer together.
So if somebody came to you and said, Andy, Michael, I'm thinking about starting a restaurant, what advice would you have for them?
I mean, you gotta be fully committed and you gotta put the time in. I think a lot of people.
By time, you mean 120 hours a week.
we're trying to, not anymore. But yeah, you have to do it the right way and learn the thing all the way through and love it. Yeah, like you have to be fully committed because, you know, a lot of people want it and they want it at the moment. Yeah. You know, it's like you really have to put a plan together and be realistic with the expectations.
It'll beat you up.
A lot of work. Yeah.
Definitely. And you need a support staff. You know, our wives and family. I mean, we're very fortunate. We have a huge support net and that's extremely helpful. I mean, go home and lay all that stuff on them all the time and they just listen and give advice. But I think to Andy's point, I mean, having the ability to be passionate about it, you have to be fully passionate about it and you have to understand what it means to fail. Mm. If you don't, like, if you're not willing and ready for failure, then it's definitely not for you because nobody, even the best of the best, have succeeded every single time.
So redoing Hog and Hominy, that was one of the last things that you guys did, right? What do you see going forward? Do you have any plans?
We have a few projects and plans in the works for the next 3 to 4 years that we've kind of wanted to do for a while here in town that could be exciting and fun. We just got to make sure that, you know, we baby step back into those.
Couple of cool projects.
Yeah.
We're excited.
No breaking news here, huh?
Nothing set in stone. A lot of, I think, 3 fun different concepts.
Yeah. And
like our growth was always also depicted not only by that timeline, but about people ready in our company take the next step.
And right.
So we've had a pretty much like a 2 to 3 year kind of.
Got some young managers and bartenders and servers and cooks that are, I think, ready to take on another role, and that's always awesome to see.
Yep.
I have a major question that we always ask everybody. Do you think that entrepreneurs are born or taught?
I think it can be learned, for sure. That's a tough one.
It is. You know, I don't necessarily know that we set out to know that, and even today, think that we're entrepreneurs. I think entrepreneurs are a lot smarter than we are and a lot more successful. I mean, we just, when Andy and I talked, we really just wanted to cook food, and we wanted to have some people who wanted to do it with us, and we wanted to have a lot of fun doing it. And I think
we just stumbled into it accidentally that we became an entrepreneur. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's why I say it's kind of learned.
When we got the call from you guys, we were like, well, this is unbelievable. I mean, this is like one of the coolest.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about a list of goals. We never put this on the list of goals because we didn't even know it was really attainable. It was like, I mean, it was just a huge honor. And I think for us being entrepreneurs, it's hard because there's so many people that do it, that make Enjoy AM restaurants successful. It's not just me and Andy. I mean, obviously.
Well, that's one thing we didn't. How many employees do you have now?
About a couple hundred.
Oh.
That's really exciting.
Yeah.
Not including Josephine Estelle.
Including New Orleans, yeah.
Yeah.
So probably like 250 with New Orleans, maybe.
It's awesome. It's one of the coolest things we do every day. I mean, payroll's, you know, not cool, but seeing how many people are affected about it is really awesome. I mean, we started Andrew Michael. His dad and my dad would alternate expediting. So it was me and Andy on the line and one other guy, and then our dad would expedite. And we had four servers in the front and a manager and a dishwasher. And now we have, 200 something people. It's pretty awesome. And we're trying to continue to grow. There's still a couple of things we want to do here in Memphis. And yeah, I mean, it's awesome. It's a huge responsibility. I think during COVID was one of the big ones that really, I know, affected Andy, and it definitely affected me, is, you become responsible for people's family, and you become responsible for their kids and, their significant others. And, it's a huge responsibility. And through the entirety of it, that was the forefront. Like, how can we make sure we're taking care of them? I mean, as entrepreneurs, as leaders, as we're last, you have to put yourself last, or you're not going to have anybody to come back to. And that's that was easy for us. It just immediately set in, and it was a thought. And it's like, okay, well, let's make sure we take care of everybody here, and then we'll figure out what to do from there. Like when Hog burnt down, it was immediate. Like we just shipped everybody to all the other restaurants. And, and when Portolino shut down, we took Portolino's employees, and we still have two front of house and one cook originally from Portolino's. It's still working for us.
That's great.
I think that's an example of the mindset of hospitality. Mm-hmm. Right, where you put yourself last.
Yeah. Well, and it sounds like it's a very much of a culture of a family for the employees and everything. So, and then another thing about your company that I know is that you believe in community service and giving back to the community. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So, yeah, I mean, like you said earlier, about Memphis has been so supportive, and the community is always there for us. So, like, we have just, like, from day one, it's like we've always got to give back in any way we can. So, like, whenever we were approached with stuff, we were just always like, let's just figure it out. Let's just do it. Because it's important just to show that we're grateful and thankful and appreciative of, all the support that we get. We want to give it right back, I guess, in whatever way we can.
And honestly, if we feel like we don't really do enough, we started a foundation, I think it was just before COVID.
We were going to try to figure out a different beneficiary every year of a local something in the community, and just kind of like every year kind of tackle a different.
Yeah, to make the impact bigger. And I think we're still trying to figure out exactly what that is and how that looks. And one of the new projects is kind of geared that way as well, which we're super excited about.
It's gonna be awesome. Yeah, we can't wait to talk about it.
We'll tell you guys before we tell anybody else.
We'll have you back when you're ready to make the big announcement. Yeah. That'll be a lot of fun.
That'll be really cool.
What excites you about Memphis these days?
Man, everything. I mean, for us, it's like, it's home. I mean, that's like the most perfect, for us, it's the most perfect thoughtfulness, the everything we know we've learned from here. We've been fortunate enough to be able to go out and to go away to college and to go overseas and then come back home and see what it is that makes Memphis so special. I mean, Memphis is just the amount of support that they pour into
each other
is unreal. It's
really strange. It's like when we have guest chefs come in town for different charity dinners or whatnot, like they don't really know what to expect because of Memphis on a national reputation is kind of just, it's really different. Yeah. Like you can ask people from
needs
all over.
Needs improvement.
Yeah.
That's kind of like they're all, And then when they leave, they're like, man, this is like not at all what we expected it to be like, especially from the people. And it's like, it's a really neat place to be. And we're excited for the growth. Like if you left Memphis today and moved away and came back in 10 years, you wouldn't recognize it.
No way.
I feel like that's a real...
You got some pretty powerful people that are doing some amazing things. Yeah. I mean, like the Carlisles, the Wilsons, the Oracles. I mean, they're just like making this city unbelievable. And it's really inspiring to watch them, you know? I mean, putting back into the city, putting back into downtown. And
even now coming to the suburbs too. Yeah, right down the street. Yeah.
To care for.
It's awesome.
And Orgel, yeah, sure is.
I mean, he's all Memphis.
Yes.
And he's such a cool, for sure. He's such a good guy too. And I don't know, it's just, you see people, he didn't have to do that, you know? I mean, obviously he lives here, but he doesn't have to do that. And it's inspiring and it kind of, you know, they set the bar for us to follow. And I don't know, I think we're trying to just do our part to have that same feel, like, you know, we can do it through food and drink and hospitality. And that's kind of how we're trying to traject ourselves, I guess, or project ourselves.
So you kind of mentioned that maybe the reputation of Memphis outside of Memphis is not as well seen. But I'll tell you that I met Danny Meyer in New York City once. Hmm. Danny Meyer is a great restaurateur.
We all inspired him.
Right.
Yeah, he's the man, for sure.
Founded Shake Shack, but also was a great restaurateur in New York City. And when he met me, and, you know, I got introduced to him. He asked me where I was from. I said, Memphis. And he said, oh, Memphis. Andrew and Michael, you're so lucky to have them there.
Oh, yeah.
So he knows you guys and he respects Memphis and he respects all the restaurants here. So it's good to see.
I made our day.
That's
one of the biggest compliments you can get. I mean, he's all about hospitality.
Yes.
And I think if you start there, it just, everything falls into place, I think. And just being grateful and being gracious is what we try to do. Yeah. And it's easy. There's two of us. We did definitely get to keep each other in check, which is
it's a good model.
That certainly is. Well, I just want to know a little bit about you guys personally. What do you do for fun?
We are very bad at golf, but we love golf. Whenever we can, we try to get out there and we play with our dads and our uncles and
huge, huge basketball fans.
It's a good time to be a basketball fan in Memphis, isn't it?
And they're both like peaking right now. It's unbelievable. Yeah. We were just talking about that. We have two kids. Both of us have two kids. So we're gratefully, like, excitingly, they're all both getting into sports, all four of them. So we have our weekends full with that. And it's awesome. I mean, I think for us trying to juggle that is trying to spend time with the family and spend time having fun.
Yeah. And just kind of really embracing the time. Like, we really talk about it, like, take a step back and, like, really embrace and appreciate the time that we have with, you know, they're both in that 6, 8, 9, 10 age area. So it's like living in the moment and like really letting it all sink in and like leaving the restaurants, going to practices, getting up early and taking them to the games, like doing all the stuff, taking them to Tiger games, like just trying to make it, you know, as fun and
that's
family.
Cool. And we both help. We sometimes coach the kids sports and that's been so much fun, but also too, to like the COVID, like I think that also came to a point where, you know, we didn't realize we're just head down and grinding through restaurants. And I think that pause was also amazing for that. Like, we were like, oh, wow. Like, we took a second. We got to spend this amazing time with our family. And it, you know, that's a really, like, strange inner struggle where you're like, you have to work and we work at night. And then, you know, your kids are like, or Dad, why are you going to work? And you're like, you have to, you know, yeah, to understand and to teach that lesson. And then also for them to not feel like you value work over them is really difficult.
Well, yeah, I think and especially with the beginning of COVID, like it was a gut check and a self check of like, whoa, okay, like we've been head down and like grinding. Like, we got to look up and like
appreciate
being in the moment with our kids, and like, yeah, but we're going to blink and they're going to be moving out.
Yes,
so like, it really helped us.
Yeah.
It really, that's the biggest, probably the most thankful thing we've got from the whole COVID deal was that.
For sure. And, you know, and I think being there with them, going through that and trying to teach them the lessons of, I mean, the kids probably got it worse than us. I mean, we know how to act socially.
Yeah.
And like, golly, it's just watching them now. It's like,
Ooh,
it's the toughest being a parent right now. It's the toughest being a business owner. But it's
toughest being a kid.
Without a doubt. That's like, yeah, you're exactly right. It's definitely harder on them.
So how old are they going to be when you say, come on, come to work with me?
No,
that way you
can. No, they're going to, yeah, they're going to get in there for sure. Not soon enough.
No, I think mine are not going to do that.
Oh, so partners don't always agree on everything.
So some of the passion that you guys had when you were young, do you see that in any of your kids?
For food?
Yeah.
I will say that their palates are probably pretty more advanced than
I would imagine.
They're well fed.
Watching them go other places, and I don't know, it's funny to watch them go through eating.
Well,
different...
You should tell a little story. No, tell a little story.
Good.
Yeah, tell it.
No, I don't know which one.
Is it one? Drew. Drew. Drew will only eat food if me or Andy makes it for him.
Oh, really?
Oh, okay.
But it's really funny. No, it's
like he it's funny. Like whenever he spends the night out of one of his friend's house, like the dad always jokes, like, send me a text message because he just won't eat food and stuff.
He's like, that's not how you do that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't like correct him.
Well, you know, it's he's been fed by the best. Yeah. So right. he knows what's good. He's not a fool, obviously. Y'all have trained him well. Well, this has really, really been fun. I really appreciate you guys coming in and telling us, and I will look forward to the breaking news podcast that we'll have when some of these new things are alive and well. So thanks so much for being here with
thank
us.
You.
Thank you.
It was a great conversation.
Thank you. It was fun.
Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to Entrepreneurial Insights. If you want to hear more about Andy and Michael and their restaurants and how to make reservations, you can look in our show notes.